thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Very well, thank you. How's Durban?
Oh, sure. Okay, so the rain, don't even get me started, Luba. Don't even get me started. The rain is good, I'll tell you that much. Our new mayor, well, I was going to say the jury's out, but I wish it was.
Interesting how we got voted in. But
yeah, it's very problematic. It is. Well, I mean, it's problematic on so many levels. It's number one problematic starting off with the ANC itself as to the fact that this is the best that they can do and that they're not bothered by the fact that they're putting a mayor in place, or they've nominated and successfully put a mayor in place who has a very, very dubious past and a tremendous amount of allegations against him. Articles that exist, 30 million rand unaccounted for, and this is the guy that the ANC chose. It's concerning because Herman Mashaba let the citizens, let the residents of Johannesburg down. I believe the DA with the Helen Ziller thing started a chain reaction. And then I wonder how many people voted for this guy. What does it mean that the EFF must have put some of their vote behind him? This is the party that called for Zuma to fall because of corruption. So I don't think anybody is looking particularly rosy over this, and it's the citizens and residents of Johannesburg who are going to pay the price, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was quite surprising. If you look at the number of seats each party has, I mean, the ANC got all its, you know, councillors to vote plus some. I mean, I saw on social media one person saying that the DA had 103 seats and only got 101 votes, which meant that two councillors went rogue, but then the other parties as well. So I think Joburg is going to be interesting.
And
over the next 100 days.
And not in a good way. All right, let's just talk about your views as well on the SAA debacle, or the SAA crisis, or where we're at now, because SAA, as we know, has now gone into business rescue. The order coming, it would seem, directly from the president.
Howard, it's an interesting one. You know, everybody that you talk to says, finally, the president has pulled rank and done what he should have done. I think it's a good step, but I keep asking myself, and I say, essentially, I mean, in business rescue, you're shutting out the shareholder and appointing a business rescue practitioner or a company and saying, please restructure and handle this company and get it back to profitability, you know, right size, downsize, do whatever you need to do to get it to be in a profitable state. Now, then it begs the question, why couldn't government do that all along? Because essentially the biggest problem it seems we've had has been meddling from the shareholder government, you know, be it through public enterprises or the board. And I think there lies our problem. We've had to resort to something fairly drastic, which really we're doing something that should have been in government's hands. I mean, we've always spoken about the Ethiopian Airlines example. And even the ones operating out of the, you know, the Gulf Emirates, you appoint a CEO and a board, and you then stay back as a shareholder and let them get on with running the business. And I think that's what we haven't seen in the last 10 years happening from government. So I just kind of asked myself, and I said, if the president resorted to this, did it mean that he wasn't able to control those who were meddling? Because it's a brave decision. But I still worry and say to myself, how did we get here? Why couldn't government simply say, this is a national asset. We need this state carrier to perform. We will bail it out, but we need a rigorous plan. And we're going to step back and find competent people to run the airliner, to be on the board, to do what needs to be done. Because the next question for me then is, who do you actually appoint as this business rescue practitioner, and do they have experience in the airline industry? Mm. You know, I may be competent in commercial aspects in general. This is a very specialized industry, and you need somebody who really understands what needs to happen. And I think part of the problem has been the unions and inability of government to kind of keep them in check in this area. So for me, those are the questions that come to mind immediately.
Yeah, I guess who is going to? I mean, it's not as though SAA could find somebody to take the reins properly before that was competent and able to do it. A business rescue practitioner can look at the business side of it and the financial side, but certainly is unlikely to have had experience in running an airline.
Okay, but then where does that get us, Howard? That's my question. You may look at the numbers very clinically and in a cold manner, but at the end of the day, this is an airliner that's got lots of bolts and pieces. You know, you've got the food side, you've got the maintenance side, and pilots and cabin crew. So it's
The fact that you're probably not going to have very many, you're certainly not going to have anybody making bookings now. I think it would be very unlikely that that new bookings will be made. It's going to be a question of honouring some of the flights where people have already booked.
Do you think the mood's that negative?
Would you book on an SAA flight now?
Certainly.
Lind, would you?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think I would either.
No,
I'll tell you what the issue for me is. Mm. What would cause me to walk away from an airliner are safety issues. If I believe that the airliner, the planes weren't being properly serviced, that there was some issue around the accreditation of pilots, for me the risk would be one that pertains to me as a person, personal risk, as an injury. You know, I'm not sure whether, you know, SAA has continued to survive with bailouts, and from an operational point of view, safety point of view, there haven't been question marks at all in that regard.
Correct.
So I wouldn't fly simply because they're just too expensive domestically. Mm. You know, if I'm flying around South Africa, I haven't flown an SAA for probably 2 years.
Which is interesting. It's the same for me. And as I mentioned on the show yesterday, I'm a lifetime platinum. So I get a lot of advantages for flying South African Airways, but I haven't flown them locally for ages because they are just too expensive.
Right. And that's why I'm saying they offer the best probably loyalty package in the country. And I didn't unfortunately get to platinum as you, so I got as far as gold, and then every year it kind of slipped down to silver and I'm probably back down to blue. But if I was going to fly you know, out of the country to the US or to or somewhere else, I would have no problem with flying with SAA. I mean, I wouldn't pay now for a ticket that I was going to fly in 6 months' time, but if I was flying in the short term, I would have no problem with them.
Well,
because for me, safety is the deciding factor.
Right.
I don't think we're in a position where we would see SAA cancelling flights and people losing money. Although I heard, you know, obviously the insurers are making that kind of noise.
Yeah, in fact, just had somebody in studio saying exactly that from Hollard, that they are no longer covering the financial risk of SAA for an SAA ticket. Now, I think that's a real factor. I guess the question to our listeners, 34519 is the SMS line, or 0618951019. If you got a good deal on an SAA ticket now, would you book it? Would you take the risk of booking a ticket on SAA if the price was attractive? I'd be very interested in your thoughts on that. Luba, you say provided the safety is fine, and which I believe it will be. I think that we've got fairly good controls in the country. We've got a very good track record. I can't imagine that this should be an issue. No, maybe
that's why for me, I'm saying that's the crucial issue. But something that we haven't discussed, I mean, leading up to this, we've had mixed signals. I mean, we've got a minister in Boeing who always makes some very interesting comments. I mean, he was on record recently as saying, just shut it down, close it, and start afresh. And that's what worries me in government, is that there doesn't seem to be one school of thought as to how to deal with, let's say, an ESCOM, or how to deal with an SAA, because he was quite aggressive in shut it down, get some bright guys like Sim Shabalala, whoever, and get them to start an airliner. And again, whilst, you know, the guys may be doing well in banking, they're not, you know, in the airline business. And so it's always worried me that you don't have one view from government. You've had the president kind of sitting back. You've got Praveen going on the show. Then you've got Tito saying something else. And that's what, for me, is worrying, is that there's no coherent message out of government as to what do we need to do with it. Yes, the president's now finally taken a step and said this is the route we're moving, but probably under advice, I would guess, more from Praveen Gordon.
Yeah, and to me, the bigger issue here, more than anything, are the thousands of people employed by the airline. It actually breaks my heart to think that there's a very good chance that a significant number of them will not be able to have jobs in the coming short while.
True, but you know, one doesn't want to see people lose jobs, but I think in South Africa we are sheltered in some way in terms of job security. I remember making a trip to the US in the early 2000s and talking to banks and other institutions around there and in New York. And it was quite common to hear somebody saying, oh, you know what, I got laid off 18 months ago. And they spoke about it as if they were just going down to the greengrocer to buy something.
Yes,
but it was quite common for somebody to say, for whatever reason, I was laid off, restructuring, and they just simply moved on. They didn't, you know, kind of feel it was the end of the world. And I do think that, be it ESCOM, be it SAA, we are going to need to shed jobs. And as painful as that is, for the survival of the entity, we need to do that. Same as our public service. It's bloated. So I think our approach to, you know, to losing jobs needs to change. We view it as almost a curse, as something that must be avoided at all costs. But at some point, good business decisions will require that you need to shed some jobs.
Mm. The difference, I think, though, and I recall the same thing when I was in New York, is that people would have a pink slip party. So they would go to their, they'd come back from lunch and there'd be a pink slip on their desk and they had been laid off. But you know, you'd go out and have a drink. But the difference there, I think, is that it is not so difficult to find replacement work in South Africa at the moment with a shrinking economy, the job shortage that there are, it has a much, much greater impact. And as you say, I think it is about surviving, because if you don't do what needs to be done, then no one has a job. So it's a matter of absolute necessity. SAA or whatever airline will be need to be more competitive. I remember as well when Swiss Air went through this, they also were shut down ultimately, and then they re-merged Swiss, not a Swiss Air. But this is not uncommon that national airlines struggle because they aren't necessarily forced to face real competitive factors. And when you're not competitive and you don't need to be, then unfortunately this is the result. You can look at Eskom, you can look at SAA, it's the same thing.
Howard?
Sorry, yes?
Is David with you today?
No, David isn't with us today. He's with us tomorrow.
Oh, I was going to say he was incredibly quiet. Now, I mean, if you take this announcement, then, I mean, I read your article yesterday on News 24. Where would you talk this up, on the positives or in between the lowlights?
No, I think it's probably both. It is probably both, because there is control. It means we're not just shelling out money to prop up an airline that isn't sustainable. So I think there is that as a positive. But I don't think we need to ignore the fact. For me, it's the sad part about this is going to be the loss of jobs. I don't think anything else really is important. The fact is that people are saying, well, this means now that the government debt alone gets transferred, and we you know, the taxpayers are going to pay it. Well, we were paying it anyway, so I don't really see, and we had already paid it, so I really don't see that as being such a factor. To me, it's all about the loss of jobs, and if this can be something that can turn it around and we can save even 50% of the jobs, then I think it is a positive, even though the chances are I'm going to lose my lifetime platinum benefits. But we'll have to live with that. That's a sacrifice, Luba, that I'm prepared to make.
And the trade unions? I know Solidarity probably won't be opposed to it.
Yes, I do think it's not going to be easy. I think it's going to be a very, very bumpy. But I also think it's important because it sends a signal out to the other state-owned enterprises, and the message is we're not going to keep bailing you out indefinitely at the cost of other infrastructure projects and other areas where those funds can better be utilized. So I do think it's an important message, It hopefully will be the start of a much stricter control over these state-owned enterprises.
I think for me, what drove it home was a comment I heard, I think, earlier this week or last week, from one of the, I think, cabinet, where a comment was made to the effect that SAA is incredibly expensive, and by repeatedly bailing out SAA, you're in effect subsidizing the travel of the rich. Whereas, you know, the person who's using a train or something else is not being subsidized to that extent. And I think that's what I found on social media got people quite upset, in the fact that we were perceived as a country to be subsidizing the lifestyle of the rich with flying SAA because, as you and I have said, it's incredibly expensive. Yet for those who are using rail or some other cheaper transport, we're not being subsidized to the same extent. And I think for a lot of people, that's what really brought it home. But, you know, I'm optimistic, but I still do raise that issue that I raised with you at the beginning of, even if you take job cuts, had government been more pragmatic and said, we can't turn around this entity in 6 months, we can turn around in maybe 5 years, and then gradually phased out, and I mean, you know, as yourself in organizations, you can have a long-term plan and say, I need to shed 10,000 jobs. I won't lose them this year. I'll use them over the next couple of years. And then when people resign, I just keep a zero headcount. That could have been done. But to me, it again comes back to the question of why we know in the past that there was meddling from the shareholder. Did the president feel that that was going to continue in the current, you know, administration, that he had to resort to this, that he couldn't, like with SAA, go and find a person who's led maybe competent and say, look, we will put the bailout funds on the table, but this is what we require from you. We're going to step back and demand these results. That's the question I'm asking. Whereas I have no problem with this business rescue, but I'm simply saying, is it not an admission somewhere that there may be more fingers that are trying to influence things, and then by going to business rescue, you effectively shut out that interference?
Interesting. I think it's a very good point and a very fair one. Luba Mayekisa, thank you. As always, this is where we have to leave it. Time is 8:54. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem.